Good afternoon, I'm glad that you're here. My name is Terry Tafoya. Let me explain a little bit what I hope to accomplish during my time here. It was confusing in terms of what it was listed on the board of what it is that I'm doing. My real interest when I was asked to come here to Holden in terms of looking at Christianity or spirituality and our Native American traditional teachings was to work with the whole idea of art. I've taught art through a number of universities, but it hasn't been something I've really taught for the last 7 or 8 years, and it's something that I've missed a great deal. And one of the things that inspired me to want to teach this particular presentation was a book by Madeline L'Engle called Walking on Water, Reflections on Faith and Art. Madeline L'Engle is very well known for a number of children's books that she did, called A Wrinkle in Time, Swiftly Tilting Planet, Wind at the Door. In it, she looks at what it means to her to be a person who's a Christian and also an artist. And her conclusion is the idea that to be a Christian is to be an artist. The idea that an artist works with his or her art form or expression with the idea of work being for the glory of God. In traditional Native American teaching, and I belong to we don't have a word in our language for either art or for religion. And it's because those are things that you do all the time, that you don't segue out and only do one day a week or only during a special time or only in a certain room. It's something that you're really doing at all times. It's a way in which you live your life. It's what you are as opposed to something that you do. And that's the sort of thing I want to explore, the whole idea of your consciousness of who you are, how you make sense out of things. The idea that for some people, being an artist is discovering the cosmos and the chaos. That around you, there are all sorts of things that you don't understand that are taking place with no real pattern to you. And yet, if you explore them and look at them through your eyes in a new way, a different way of understanding, you discover that there is meaning, you discover what the patterns are, so that what becomes, in the beginning, a random jumble of notes becomes a complicated musical piece. That what, when you first see, is only a jumble of color, that when you start exploring it, you certainly start discovering forms in it. That for your life, when meaningless things happen, if you pull back far enough and start looking at it, you discover all sorts of truths with it. And so it is with a number of our traditional medallions that are done by many of the different tribes. This particular one comes from Sioux Country, from the Rosebud Reservation. That these medallions are usually done in a specific way where a single bead starts out in the beginning. And it's important for you to realize that for almost all of our traditional Native American art forms, if you call them that, they're used as part of our teaching. Because traditionally, as Indian people, we didn't have schools or colleges. Rather, we had to depend on each other to teach each other. And one of the ways in which we had these teachings were the physical objects that we could wear or carry with us, with the idea that as human beings, it's very easy to forget who we are, to forget what our responsibilities are. And so for that reason, we wear these things so that they touch us, remind us of who we are. And so traditionally, when we're dressed in our full traditional regalia, when we wear an eagle feather, it touches us and reminds us that we belong to people who are related to the people of the air. That when we wear seashells, they touch us and they remind us that we're related to the people of the water. That we wear the four-footed people's skin, like the deer skin of my moccasins or around my hair, it touches us and reminds us that we're related to the four-footed people. And so it is with these medallions. That they show us that all these beads, even though they're not necessarily touching one another, if you step far enough away from them, you start seeing the complicated patterns emerge. That each person, regardless of whether they're an animal person or a human person, has a place in that tremendous pattern. And as a human being, you will never fully see the pattern. Maybe only the Creator can step far enough away to see the whole pattern at one time. And we realize it's perhaps not our job to see all the pattern, but merely have the faith to trust that it actually is there. With that in mind, since I seem to have gotten a number of people right now, what I'd like to do is also show you some slides. Let me, before I do that, mention in terms of what my intent of being here, in addition to talking about looking at all people as being artists, all people as being creators, because we are children of the Creator, that we're made in God's image, and since God was a creator, therefore all of us are. And it's a great frustration for me. I'm a clinical psychologist. I've also worked for the last 15 years as a teacher trainer with education across the United States and Canada, particularly in the area of bilingual education. And one of the really frightening things that I see is the difference between working with children and working with adults. I was area director for Indian Head Start programs on a five-state area. I've worked with children between the ages of 3 and 5. When you work with a young child and you say, draw me a picture of this, or do this dance, or sing this song, almost always the children will respond by saying, I will, or I can, or I'll do it, or shoving you out of the way and doing it. And yet when I have to work with grown-ups and I say, draw me a drawing, paint me a picture, sing me a song, they start clenching, getting real tight and very rigid and say, I can't. Or say, ask him, he's a singer. Or ask this person over there, she's an artist, with the idea that you can't do something. And this is very hard for a lot of Indian people traditionally to understand, that we recognize that everybody has different degrees of talents or abilities, but that we all have talent and ability because we all come from the same reflection. Okay? And so for you to deny that you can do that is in fact a denying a part of you, which is denying a part of creation. And that to me doesn't seem terribly healthy either as someone involved in spirituality or as a clinical psychologist. And so that's one of the things I want to explore during the brief time we have together, not only this time, but in the other 3 segments that I'll be doing. When I was asked to come in during this arrangement, let me tell you some of the limitations which are also part of the freedom that I have. And that's, I don't know who you are. I know some of you certainly. I don't know who will be here tomorrow when I do a session. I don't know who will be here until Thursday when I do a total of 4 sessions. So it's hard for me to plan the continuity. And so what I intend to do over the next 4 times is that I suspect I'll have some people repeating. What I will do is do a basic thing and then concentrate on different areas, so that for today I want to concentrate primarily on the idea of beadwork and what the designs and colors and those things mean, particularly for the plains and plateau area Indian people, native people. And then another day I'll do concentration on Southwest Indians in terms of the Pueblo Indian people, which is what I am from my father's side. I'm Warm Springs from my mom's side, which is plateau from central Oregon. I'll explain a little bit about what those terms mean. But each time I'll do a different focus, even though some of the message will be similar. Okay? And for those of you who are here because you got your arm twisted by someone saying, oh, go listen to him, he's a storyteller, I will actually tell a couple of stories periodically. Okay? So with that in mind, I'd like to go ahead, because of such a short amount of time we have together, of showing you the slides that I brought. I did bring some beadwork items, but when you have to yank something around all across Washington State, and then have to take a 2.5-hour ferry ride and then call it up to your room, you discover that you really appreciate slides, which take up much less space and less heavy. And so I'm going to share this slide. I have no idea how long this will run. It depends on how bored I get. This first slide is a picture of the Earth, which you should be familiar with. It's fairly well known. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this particular slideshow was focusing on the concept of the circle and why a circle is a sacred object for Indian people, why it's a symbol for Indian people. That for the religion, if you want to call it that, the tradition in which I'm raised, before we say something of importance, before we do preaching or Indian prayer or witnessing, whatever you want to call it, we have to turn in a circle before a longhouse. And this shows that we're putting ourselves into unity with the earth, which turns in a circle. That the medallions that I showed you are in circles. That the drums that we use for a lot of our sacred ceremonies are in circles. That the circle represents wholeness, unity. It represents everything, the 4 different directions. And so I want you to keep that symbol, that circle in mind, because you're going to encounter it over and over again as we go through this slideshow. And hopefully once you keep your eyes open, you'll discover it over and over again in your own life as well. In traditional teaching, in almost every Native American tribe with which I have some familiarity, there's the concept that we were not created quite in the way that Genesis describes it. There was the idea that rather that human beings being created as the first, not as the first, but as the Lord of creation, the idea that we were given dominion or dominance over the animal people, this is not the teaching of Native American tradition, because our teaching is the way of the circle. And I think it's of interest to me that even coming here to Holden, one of the things you're told in your orientation is that your meals are different here because we concentrate on things lower in the food chain. That whole mindset is very alien to Native people, the idea that there are lower things in the food chain. That if you take the idea of a circle, there is nothing lower. In some theological beliefs, there's the idea that one of the reasons why dance was removed from Christian theology early on was because when you danced in a circle, there could be no hierarchy, that you were all of the same mind, you were all on the same level. And so it is with our teaching in terms of how these circles work, that there is nothing lower in the food chain than you are, but in the same way there's nothing higher. That we were not created as the first person on the chain, but rather that we were created as part of the overall. So again, you see the circle here. We were created as brother and sister to the animal people. And indeed, in a number of Native American languages, we can't even use the term animals versus humans. That instead, when you're speaking in your native language, you'll have to say things such as salmon people, bird people, deer people, and finally human people, so that you don't have that kind of setting apart, because when you set apart, then you can alienate. You can make it not you. And at that point, you start losing your respect for something. When Christianity first came, we had a large influence from outside people in terms of understanding what our roles were, who we were. And there was a lot of change that took place in terms of what our traditional way of understanding the world was about. All that was dictated in the United States, what would take place is that the reservations were franchised to missionaries. So in almost all cases, missionaries were head of our reservations. They were superintendents of our reservations, with the idea that Christianity was the only thing that could humanize or civilize Native people. And so our traditional way of dress was something that we were permitted to use. When it did take place, it was something that was only allowed during special rituals or ceremonies, although we did maintain it usually during in secret, in undergrounds or hiding places, so that our traditions could be maintained. When white people first came, the old Indian people, our ancestors, told us, be very careful because they don't understand how the world works. They won't show respect for things. And so, for example, up here in the Northwest Coast, with the salmon, for example, in the old days when white settlers first came, Indian people would not permit younger people to sell salmon to the white people because there's a way of preparing it to show respect for it. And they said the non-Indian people won't understand this. They won't treat the salmon in the right way. And if you don't go through the rituals and the ceremonies with it, the salmon will stop coming. Now, the salmon was so plentiful in the old days that it was said that a man could walk across the salmon's back in a river. But when the canneries came in, that really changed the nature of Indian commercial fishing, particularly here in Washington State. And it's declined to such an extent, now there's at least one species of salmon that would be extinct if it weren't for artificial promulgation. And so our old Indian tradition, the idea that if you don't take care of these things in the right way, they'll disappear, was coming true. These scenes I'm about to show you are part of a first salmon ceremony, which is done by the coastal Indian people, although it's similar to some of the other first salmon ceremonies by the plateau Indian people. This is a gathering. When the first salmon of the season is caught, it's called a chief or a king salmon. It's a scout. And the first salmon that's caught is especially one that's saved. There are blessing songs that are done over it that are sung. There is a procession that's led. All the time, the songs are being sung in praise of the salmon, because salmon are seen as being like human people. There's a spirit inside them, just as there's a spirit inside everything. And so once the salmon is roasted, the flesh is fed to particularly the elders of the village to show our respect to old people, but the bones, the head, the skin, all that's saved so it can be returned to the water. And this is what you're seeing here. The young man in the center wearing the cougar skin headdress, it was the fisherman who caught the first salmon, so this is his responsibility.
if it were a female fisher person, which sounds odd, if it were a female fisher, well, how do you do inclusive language? Then it would be a woman who was doing this particular ceremony. The man leading the elders, Joe Washington, who's a spiritual leader for the Lummi Indian people, and his wife, Martha Washington, who is also taking part in the ceremony, whose back is to us now. That this salmon, especially blessed and prayed over with the idea of releasing its spirit, so it returns back to the rest of its tribe and tells the people that the Indian people have not forgotten their responsibilities, that they still keep the traditions, that they still show the respect and prayerful relationship they're supposed to maintain. And so this salmon is returned back after the flesh has been removed and given to the elders of the village to be put back to where it started spawning. And so for that way, its circle is complete. And so we see again the symbol of the circle as being a completeness, as being a whole. And this is true whether or not we see it in the salmon of the Northwest or in the Papago Indian people who gather the fruits of the desert, the Woodlands Indian people who go ricing to gather the wild rice, are here in Washington State again where different materials are used for basket making. That we recognize that as we choose these things, that we're taking a bit of life with us. That it's a very great paradox for us that in order for our life to continue, we must consume life. Unfortunately, what's happened in Washington State, like a number of other places, there's been clear cutting, because a lot of the things that we would gather for food or for basket making is not seen as commercially viable. And so the forests are being cut down to get the valuable timber, but it means the death of a lot of the things that would traditionally be used by the Indian people. And that's a very sad thing. And so it is that we live with death all the time, that the rivers have been dammed off in order to generate hydroelectric power, but it means that the salmon runs have been disturbed. So that for a number of the tribes, the salmon, which was so much a part of the native traditional religion, is no longer available. For example, up here in Eastern Washington among the Colville Indians, the salmon ceremonies no longer take place because the salmon can't make it past the dams. And that's a very sad thing. And this whole idea of what life means, that for our smallest children, they're taught that even when we use the corn, that we've taken part of life. That when we kill the sheep or kill the deer, that we're taking a part of life. And so it is that we, because we belong to a circle, have to return life to what we've taken. And so a lot of our religious activities, our prayers, our songs, our dances, all focus around the idea of our giving back to the earth some of the energy or power that we've taken out so that our life can continue. This is a sand painting from the Navajo Indian people, again representing creation, the balance of the four directions, the circles that are there. That these circles start showing up over and over again in the weaving of baskets. And it's important for you to realize that as you watch this woman, it's the Hopi woman weaving her basket, that she's not only making the circles that are obvious to you, the spirals that are bound together, but in her sewing, the very act of creating this basket, she's also making circles. And she coils it. This circle, for example, in this ceremony for a woman's puberty rites among the Apache, again, the idea of the four directions representing the daybreak star or the morning sun, which is very important because that's a time of balance when day and night are together for a brief instance in time. And this is the idea that our old people try to instill in us in terms of our spirituality, trying to maintain a balance of what's appropriate for us. That among the Sioux people or the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota people, when the pipe is used, it's pointed in the east and then in the other direction so that the person who holds up the pipe, which is seen as an altar for the people who use it, and not all Native American people do, that they turn in a circle when they first offer this pipe up to the ancestor spirits as well as to the creator. So the circle is again seen. The circle is in the bowl that is in the man's hand, which represents the altar of the earth. That again, when you see the weavings and blankets or in other things, it's not just that it's a two-dimensional design. To the weaver weaving it, she was creating a circle. This particular one is the Navajo weaving, Among some of the other tribes, such as the Pueblos or Hopis, it was the men who did the weaving rather than the women. But again, the idea that as you weave, you're creating circle upon circle. That the circles are used in the baskets, which represent so many things to us in terms of holding, in terms of containing, just as our lives for a very brief instant contain something meaningful, our life, that these things are used in the ceremonies over and over again. You'll see those emerge, the circle theme. The potter who makes her pottery is again making something in a circle. It's significant that Indian people never used a potter's wheel, that we've always built things up by hand. And even today, even though we would have access to a potter's wheel, I know of no traditional pottery maker who would use a potter's wheel, because you have different contact with the things that you work with. And so you see these circle designs over and over again in terms of pots. When you have a circle, you don't really have a beginning and an end. You can have a change in the designs and patterns, but you don't have a stopping point. And I think this helps teach us to accept death, our life, or birth in slightly different ways, with the ideas of them not being an end point, but simply another point within the circle. Again, in terms of the textiles that are used in this traditional Pueblo-style embroidery, even though it may look geometric to you in terms of lines, straight things, squares, triangles, again, to the weaver, to the embroiderer, she was making, or he in this case, because it's a Pueblo design, and usually this is done by men, except nowadays a lot of the women are doing it, that again you would be seeing the circles being made by the person doing the work. You see the circles in the buttons in this little girl's button blanket. That traditionally the coastal Indian people in Washington State, Southeast Alaska, and British Columbia would have made their own buttons using different kinds of seashells, but once the white traders came in, it became easier to get these kind of seashells, buttons, mother pearl buttons from China, and nowadays a lot of people even using plastic buttons. Because the material is not so important, it's the symbolism, it's the meaning that these things represent. Just as when you take your Eucharist, it doesn't really make that much difference whether the bread is unleavened or leavened. You can take the idea of what is the symbol behind the meaning of the bread, rather than the bread itself. I'm sorry that this is a little bit at an angle. This is my sister, and I wanted you to see the quill work on her head in terms of, again, representing the four directions of the world, the medicine hoop or medicine circle, the medallion at her neck. Those are, again, all these things of circles. That the strands of Indian money, the wampum that she's wearing around her neck as necklaces, that even though they look like lines, if you look at each one individually, it's a circle with a circle in the center. And then you string them together and they become the necklace. That on my nephew's hair, he's wearing, again, medallions that will represent all these things that I've been talking about. The representation of the vagrant star, that which balances the night and day, is coming down on his beadwork. For this little girl, she wears a circle of different sorts. If you look very closely, it's got Mickey Mouse inside. And I wanted to include her with this, with the idea that a lot of people want us to remain the way that we used to be in pre-contact days, without understanding that Indian people are as much a part of the 1980s and 1990s as anybody else is in the human family. That we take in what's appropriate for us, but we don't change our values. That we accept what is new, but we accept it in a way that's meaningful for us, in the same way that I can use a blow dryer to blow my drum, and yet not touch the integrity of the drum. Again, for this young Yakima girl, you can see the circles of seashells in her ear and on her neck, the conch shells. Again, not only representing the circle, but the idea of the seashell representing people of the waters. And this picture, this young boy who's now in his 60s, this is a young man who's next person to the Colville Reservation. And you can see in his dance outfit the circle of mirrors that are down on the otter skin that forms a kind of V shape. Again, the circle idea. Circle is in the drum. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was the whole concept of colors and how important colors were. That traditionally red was a very important color to Native people and still is. For a number of tribes, it's associated with healing. That when we do things that are medicine things or things that are protective activity, red paint is often used the way it's being used here. When you're doing things for war or protection of that nature, then black paint is used. That all these colors have different meanings that vary from tribe to tribe or family to family. And what I'm trying to get a point to is a point of information, is the idea of not to look at it with the idea that red always means life the way an anthropologist would tell you, but rather try to understand what is the meaning not only for the artist, the one who creates these things, but also for you. What does red mean for you? What does blue mean for you, or yellow or black? That they have different meanings for different people. That this is an Athabascan deerskin jacket, or it's actually caribou. Before the coming of the white people, Indian people very rarely made their own beads. That even though beaded work is associated automatically being Native American, in reality, before pre-contact days, this kind of decoration would be more common. It's actually made with porcupine quills. The porcupine quills, there are many different kinds of quills on a porcupine. There are some that are more suitable than others. That they're plucked after the porcupine is dead, usually. And then you soak them in water, because just as if you think about spaghetti being very hard till you soak it, but it becomes flexible after it's been in water for a while, the same thing is true with a porcupine quill. And then they're pulled between it, your teeth, which flattens them out so you can use them for sewing. The natural color is the ivory color, and then these have always also been dyed with a reddish color. So again, you get the idea of balance, the red with the white. This idea of having to keep yourself in harmony, which is very much a part of traditional teaching, because that's how we feel people get ill, people get sick when they go out of harmony or out of balance. The beadwork shown in this particular bag is very important, because over and over again I want you to look at the idea of balance, of harmony. That if you look at not just individual elements within this bag, but pull back for a moment and look at the symmetry, the balance between those two things. Over and over again, there's a need for Native American people to try to figure out how to live their life in this kind of balance. Not the idea of living it so things are in dead center, because that's why it's called dead, but there's a dynamic tension involved, this idea of trying to maintain a harmony, which is in some ways not so simplistic as the sort of things that I'm showing you now are the whole concept of things like yin or yang, or black and white, because that's too simplistic a belief, that kind of balancing. I like to use the term harmony instead, because if you think about musical notes, if you hit certain notes together, they form a chord, but it's an action. It's not something that stands still and it's frozen the way beadwork is frozen, or a symbol of yin and yang, or a cross that's exactly the same horizontally as it is vertically. That rather, musical notes are those things that are an active interplay of existence, that they're an interaction that's taking place. And that's how we're supposed to model our life, not in terms of just a simple balance, but this complex interaction between what we do and how the world works. What I'm showing you now are some contour beadwork. There are different styles of beadwork that exist. But again, I want you to look at the colors in terms of, not that I can tell you that this is exactly what the artist intended, because I don't have the artist here. That there are some things, these are certainly floral designs, which are very reflective of certain tribal activities. That these come from the Athabascan people in the far north in Canada and Alaska, where for a very brief time during the summer, the fields suddenly ripen, and you'll see almost overnight growth where there wasn't growth before. And for a very, very short time, the wasteland, which are to some people a wasteland, which was covered in ice and snow, is suddenly covered with flowers. Many of them very, very tiny flowers that you have to get down on your hands and knees to appreciate. And so the artist likes to utilize those to remind them of a time that even though it may be cold outside, there can always be this springtime inside your soul or your spirit. This is another style of traditional jacket or shirt made out of buckskin, and I wanted to show it to you in terms of the narrow beadwork, which is called a lazy stitch, as opposed to the contour beading that you saw a moment ago in the beadwork of the moccasins. That these are different styles that are used in different ways. Again, we see the contour beadwork. Again, you see the symmetry, the balance between the right and the left. This particular one is coastal Indian style with the small clubs on the bottom that you can see, the war clubs or paddles. This is called a paddle shirt. It's used in the traditional winter dance ceremonies. When the owner of the shirt dances, those pendulating wooden carvings on the bottom, which represent the short war clubs, will strike one another. And so as the dancer dances or even moves, you'll have its own internal rhythm going along with the song.